and welcome to another episode of The Right Side with me, Andrea Ruth, and my always co-host, Kimberly Ross. How are you?
I'm fantastic on this sweltering summer day. Andrea, how are you?
It is. It's actually been hot up in the Pacific Northwest, too, and it's one of those days where it actually gets kind of humid. So we've actually had a very, very dry summer up here, so it hasn't rained in almost a month.
So it's like 78 degrees there.
Yeah, it has gotten up into the 90s, but yeah, the no rain is making the leaves on the trees are actually already changing up here because of
That's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it happened this way in 26. It's funny. Facebook memories actually have helped me like realize like, oh, when it's dry during the summer, the leaves change really early up here. So I have a picture from August 28th of 2016, where the, if anyone doesn't know, I live in a very rural area and I have there's a hill behind the house and it was completely by August 28th. It was full on like yellow and red up on the hill
amazing.
Yeah. All the maple trees and stuff like that had already changed. Last summer, I got the same Facebook memory on August 28th. And I was like, wait a second. I was like, that hill was already changing. So I went out there out to the back patio last year. And I was like, and I took another picture and I was like, it was completely green because we had quite a wet summer last year. And so this summer it's back to almost by August 28th, it'll be, red and yellow again. So we've had a very,
that's amazing. Summer. Down here, it doesn't turn. The trees don't turn until right after Thanksgiving, actually.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. So you only have about 4 or 5 months of not having them. Yeah.
Yes.
So that's how this is. But you've been on your first week of a new career. And so how's that going?
Yes. Oh, it's going well. The full-time mommy blogging when the child is asleep, which is like the only time you can do it, or watching an educational television show. But no, it's been good. And it's been a fun change of pace. And I've been able to write more. So it's good. I'm looking forward to a brand new week of that.
Yeah. So as a difference, a dichotomy of experiences, I binged watch over 2 days. And I put this off for a while because I'm just not that interested in The Handmaid's Tale. I mean, for obvious reasons, I read the book back in. No, I didn't read the book. I think I've read like snippets of it, but I've never read the actual book by Margaret Atwood. And so but I have, because of all the hysteria around Trump being elected and The Handmaid's Tale, coming in, I've kind of watched it as, I don't actually think it's a good show. I think I've said this to you over text, I don't think it's actually a good plot line. I think it's well acted, but it does things that are just ridiculous, and you kind of sit there and think but humans don't interact this way. They don't normally react well to splitting up families on a consistent basis. The fact that this whole story happens within a 3-year time period so far really speaks to this is really a limited lifetime that this whole super uber Christian quote unquote regime is trying to do their little experiment. But but anyway, so I binged watched it, and I look, the thing that made me most want to turn it off was when the main character was using the toilet and they had her on camera doing this, and the toilet paper roll was on backwards. It was going underneath. And so I was about ready to kind of turn it off at that point, despite all the ridiculousness. But they also they had one episode where I can't think of what her name is. Oh, June. Well, her name is June. Her name is Offred, and in the new kind of regime, under the new regime. But her real name is June, and they make the Muslims look like the very peaceful. Oh, they, they're hiding. They're having to hide their peaceful Islamic religion.
And the
Christians are the horrible. I don't know any Christians that would be. I mean, maybe yes, back in Salem, during the Salem days, 400, 500 years ago. But that was kind of shortly after Reformation, and things have changed a lot. Especially, it always makes me laugh. There's this one cartoon of, I think I've mentioned it on here, of the dinosaur from Toy Story where it's the happy dinosaur, and it was like here's Christianity in America today, and then they were like biblical Christianity, it's the dinosaur from Jurassic Park. Sorry, I need to get my brain on straight. But anyways, so it's very like amusing to me. As you know, I made another disturbing discovery about a laughable discovery about this whole thing, is that Margaret Atwood looks like Glenn Close and the Grinch had a baby, which was really, I felt really mean saying that, but it was like, I was like looking up her background, cause I realized that Margaret Atwood's Canadian. And of course, Canada is the, you know, the savior nation in this whole, you know, saga. But anyways, this whole thing about, you know, you always mentioned quite frequently, like you have kind of a nickname you call, you know, certain, you know, certain types of feminists, particularly left-wing feminists, you know, the handmaids, where they think that the Trump era or the Pence, you know, they always want, you know, Donald Trump to be impeached, but you're like, so you're fine with Mike Pence? Well, Mike Pence is the guy, you know, that our friend gay patriot Bruce Carroll always, you know, he every once in a while he'll do the, this many days Trump's been in office and still no concentration camps for gays, you know, kind of thing.
I love to call the modern day third wave feminist handmaids, because they call themselves that. They believe that they're living in this Trump era. They're living in some sort of like fantasy where women are oppressed or on the, like they're right on the edge of being so cruelly oppressed that they're essentially handmaids. And I call them that all the time. And they kind of get mad about that. And it makes me laugh. But I have not read the Handmaid's Tale book, and I've never actually seen the show. Shh, don't tell anybody that.
I don't think you really need to. I do it for cultural relevance. Yeah.
I've read a lot about it and what it entails and everything. And I'll just learn from you as you finish, you know, watching the show and stuff. But I'm not really interested in watching it, I would say. But I know that it's talking about women essentially being used as, of course, kind of incubators for people that, I guess, the elite people who don't want to bear the children
they can't. It's of course. See, this is the thing, Kim. This book, I don't think, is really about Christianity at all. It is, Margaret Atwood is an environmental activist from Canada. Yeah. And so what it's all about is that there's a certain amount of people at one point in the second season, like it's that the men apparently cannot have kids because they've so contaminated the earth. I mean, talk about Silent Spring Redux, right? they've so contaminated the earth that you know, everyone free. Now, why America has contaminated itself so badly, but Canada is perfectly fine, right? When Canada's economy basically has always rested on ours. and it's very amusing to me. It's like that's not how ecology works. Like you can contaminate certain areas, but you're not going to contaminate, like, you basically are blaming an entire country, but the country right next to it is perfectly fine.
Of course.
Yes. Yeah. So,
and as we mentioned, I think a few weeks ago, in talking about Brian Stelter from CNN, Reliable Sources, quote unquote, he had this little clip a few weeks ago about The Handmaid's Tale. They're talking about how applicable it is to this time frame that we live in right now. And I said this on our podcast a few weeks ago. The producer of the show, he was sitting in this darkened room during this interview, and he was like, you know, I really wish I didn't need to make this right now. I really wish it wasn't so popular, essentially, but it is. And I feel that it's my duty to show this kind of thing because somehow it mirrors reality in the United States. It's so stupid. They know that they make money off of this and the fear mongering and making people think it reflects what's actually going on in the U.S. It's just ridiculous. And I, after you explain all the stuff about the show, it really doesn't make me want to watch it.
Yeah. No, see, I feel like I'm doing a public service.
Taking one for the team, Andrea.
Yeah. No, well, and the other part about it that I think I mentioned, just while anyone who's listening, I do text Kim about while I'm watching this. Kim is subjected to my texts of, I can't believe this. But as another one of our friends who is, you know, gay and married, married. Gabriel Mallor, I remember him saying years ago, talking about how ridiculous it was, the overrepresentation of gay people in Hollywood, you know, in just in not Hollywood, but just in TV shows. And, you know, he was, this was back in 2015. I remember having this conversation with him on Twitter. And he was kind of like saying, like, I don't get why they have to, like, every single show, you know, it's like every fourth person is, you know, the amount of gay people is not 25% in the country. So the fact that every single show has, you know, multiple, you know, gay personalities in it, like I said to you, every third person in The Handmaid's Tale is gay. And I'm just kind of like, I don't understand, like, why, like, where, other than maybe they are trying to, like, say, like, oh, well, you know, the Trump administration is, you know, trying to oppress gays, which, again, like I said, they've done nothing to oppress gays. And one of the things about Donald Trump is that he's always been very pro-gay, which is fine, you know, I mean, yes. It's just like, it's hilarious to me how many, I mean, I think there's been a gay wedding. There's been a lesbian woman who had her clitoris removed. And then there's like the main character's best friend who escaped to Canada is also, you know, gay. And it's just like, it's like, okay, you have like main storylines are all about homosexual relationships. I just think it's just really, like we talked about on Brink, why we're talking about this is because of the hysteria and the freak out and the kind of taking everything in this light of mass hysteria and really embellishing. And I mean, yes, it is a dystopian novel, but again, The Handmaids and certain people, and it's not a minority of people on the left, like, kind of think that this is, oh, this is in danger of happening. Yeah.
Right. So it's not a reflection of reality at all. And as we were talking this week about the show and you were talking about The Handmaid's Tale, that hysteria, as we've seen more than once, is on display in real life, because women will go to wherever, I think it's usually wherever Mike Pence is showing up at to speak or for whatever event, but they'll show up in The Handmaid's Tale outfit, which is the white bonnet and the red cape or whatever you want to call it, or cloak, whatever, and they'll show up and they'll demonstrate like that as if we're right on the edge of that becoming reality. And one thing that I wanted to talk about this week was the success in Argentina with the bill on abortion that was actually voted down this week, which was such a good success for Argentina. And I hope it's something that we can emulate here in the U.S. sometime in the future. But there were women at the protesting of people who supported life in Argentina. They would dress up in The Handmaid's Tale outfits, even though happens and, you know, in the horrible place called America, apparently they would dress up like that as if not legalizing abortion in Argentina was very similar to that whole thing, which of course is not true. And if you're not aware with what happened in Argentina on Thursday morning, really early on Thursday morning, the Senate there voted 38-31 not to legalize abortion. And the abortion bill that was at stake was one that would have legalized it to 14 weeks, which is still much, much more restrictive than anything we have in the U.S. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you look at abortion bills in the U.S., there's a handful of states, I think now, right now, it's about 18 states that have abortion bans on 20 weeks. That's where the abortion ban is. And, you know, other than that, a lot of the other states have very permissive abortion laws. But still, 20 weeks is the most restrictive we can currently get. One in Iowa was shot down recently. That was a heartbeat bill. So once a heartbeat was detected, abortion would be illegal, and that was actually shot down in the courts. Same thing in Mississippi. There was a 15-week bill that was signed into law, and that was shot down in the courts as well. So in terms of countries that are very, you know, lax about their abortion laws, the U.S. have the women in the U.S. have the ability to have an abortion in so many times during pregnancy or for whatever reason, in many cases that women elsewhere in the world don't. But again, Argentina, a majority Catholic nation, and I'm so thankful that they voted not to legalize abortion. It's currently still an option, if you want to call it that, for women who have experienced pregnancy because of rape or incest, or if the mother's life is at risk. So clearly, there's not a female who is, you know, like, she's not being forced to have a child if she's been raped. As much as I don't agree with abortion for rape or incest, if you're going to say women are still forced to give birth against their will and against, you know, their own health, that's not actually the case. But like I said, there's protesters here in Argentina who had been dressing up in the red capes and the white bonnets and everything. And one of the biggest things from the victory in Argentina, and we actually had Professor Charlie Camosi on recently. Was it last week? It was mm-hmm. last week. And he is, you know, Catholic, and he's very pro-life and everything. And he had this really, really great thread on Twitter about the win in Argentina. And one thing which a lot of people, women especially, who are pro-choice, they will not be talking about this. He brought up a really great point that a huge reason that this bill went through, I mean, this bill didn't go through, that it was voted against, was because of pro-life senators who were female, and they held the president and other male politicians to task because they said, and this is what he had in one of his tweets, he said, Senator Silvina Garcia Larburu accused the president of distracting from the country's troubled economy and lack of support for women, and Senator Marta Varela highlighted the hypocrisy of claiming to be for women's rights while women suffer because of abysmal health and social services. So the real problem is not that women are not allowed to have an abortion in Argentina, it's that the regular health care and other services that they so desperately require, those needs are not being met. Funds are not going there. And it doesn't make sense to focus on abortion as, oh, let's speak for women, let's allow them this, when you don't allow them even proper medical care. And you can't completely disregard those things that actually matter and say you care about women when you're focusing on something like, you know, supporting killing their unborn child. So I really, really, of course, the left didn't talk about this in the media at all. But it was such a huge win for women who really are focusing on caring for females and giving them just the basic care they deserve. And that basic care does not include abortion.
Yeah, I know the New York Times, and I can't remember, maybe it was The Atlantic, did a report on Catholic hospitals. And I know Alexandra DeSantis from National Review, who would be a mm-hmm. great person to have on.
Yes.
But she has had some really great threads on the misrepresentation of, you know, of calling out Catholic hospitals for not, you know, providing women's health care, when what they're doing is they are talking about things like certain types of, you know, contraception and abortion. They are saying that they're including that as women's health care. And it's like, okay, you can't, you know, women's hospitals or Catholic hospitals to say, which I have gone to for the only hospital here in the county that I live in is a Catholic hospital. And I've never once, of course, I've never, you know, needed or asked for or ever wanted an abortion, but I wouldn't chalk that up to, but of course we have, you know, Planned Parenthood, facilities around, so it's not like they're being underserved. But yeah, to say that, you know, oh, Catholic hospitals don't provide, you know, adequate women's health care, when you're including abortion as quote unquote women's health care, I find that very specious, and as well as anyone should, especially for Catholic hospitals, forcing that and saying that they're inadequate when even me personally have had, you know, when I was dealing with my eating disorders and my suicide attempts, you know, they had things like gap services to where, you know, if there was something that my insurance would pay for, you know, they would kind of cover it. And they do that because they are a part of Catholic Charities. So, mm-hmm. You know, saying that they don't support women, in my experience, they have more than adequately cared for me and every single person that I know that's a woman who's ever had to go to St. Joseph's in Bellingham, Washington. So, Now, I did want to say, you know, we were talking about, you know, what we are able to get past in the U.S. I always remind people, British Columbia and Canada is, you know, always seen as so much more liberal than the United States. And especially places like provinces like British Columbia, which I'm sorry if anyone listening, if you're hearing weird background noise, it's because I live less than a mile from Canada and the Abbotsford Air Show with the Blue Angels is going on. And so it's jets flying over the house. I don't know if people can hear that or not. Every once in a while I hear a really loud jet going by and I'm just like, it's going to mess up the sound. British Columbia... Because of the prevalence of, they have very high Chinese and Indian population, which you know it's all fine and good, but it got in the 90s got to a point where the number of female babies being aborted after an ultrasound where they announced, you know, that where you could tell after, what is it, 18 weeks is when you can find out if it's a boy or a girl, or 23 weeks. I can't remember.
It's 20 weeks right okay. now.
Mm-hmm. I think I had to wait till my 23-week appointment, but anyways, well, that was 10 years ago. I know I'm way outdated on the having a baby technology, but in British Columbia, they had to create a law where you can't find out what gender your baby is until after the abortion period, which I believe is 20 weeks, is over. So even places as liberal as British Columbia, and you're it's not your ultrasound tech that can tell you, like we have here in the US, like usually you go to the ultrasound. It's not your OBGYN or your primary care provider that tells you what gender your baby is. It's the ultrasound tech when you're there in the room. In British Columbia, after 20 weeks, you can have, you know, your normal scheduled ultrasound. They can't tell you they're in the room, and it can only be after the abortion period is over. They can send the information over to your OBGYN or your whoever's taking care of you during your pregnancy, and that provider is the one that has to tell you if you want to find out if your baby's a boy or a girl. Yeah. So we think that, you know, I mean, we sit around talking about how, you know, restrictive, you know, or the threat of, you know, oh my goodness, Roe v. Wade might go back to the States. Gasp. But, you know, more liberal and Europe has more stringent and restrictive, you know, abortion laws. I mean, we are really heinous, I think, when it comes to restricting killing little babies in this country. That's all I'll
right.
say about it.
No, so. I mean, and if there is an actual war on women, it has nothing to do with not allowing abortion for women of a certain gestational age. It's nothing about that. It has everything to do with targeting the inhabitants in their womb, male or female. I mean, that is the real problem. It has nothing to do with the very, very, very lax laws that we have here in America. And you're talking about Roe v. Wade, and maybe that'll go back to the States. And another freak out. Then the other freak out that happened this weekend. Well, there's freak outs all the time and every day, especially with the news cycle we have now. But as we know, the announcement was done on Friday for when Brett Kavanaugh will have his confirmation hearing. So of course, the left is flipping out about the fact that these are even scheduled, because how dare they, because they don't have enough information, which is completely false. They have access to so many of his written decisions, and he's actually provided more documentation than previous nominees. So if they're concerned that they haven't had enough time to look at it, it's because, well, Kamala Harris, you're lazy. Mm-hmm. But as we heard on Friday, the hearings are scheduled to begin on September 4th, and they should last about 3 or 4 days, I think. But I mean, we should just get ready right now and be prepared just for the wailing and the gnashing of teeth, because it'll only get worse as we get closer. And then can you imagine during the hearings, I can't even imagine what it's going to be like on television, how these senators are going to question him and how people will be protesting. I guarantee you we'll see some Handmaid's outfits, Andrea.
And you know, just like with Gorsuch's confirmation and other people's confirmations, you know, the disruptions of, what is it? What's the pink people?
Code pink. Yes, we almost forgot about them.
Yes, you know, it's always code pink people are in there for confirmation hearings of you know, Trump administration people and things like that. So I'm just, yeah, I mean, I'm going to have, we're all going to have to break our no cable news watching if we're going to be responsible in covering this as our, in our respective roles at an opinion news site. We'll probably all be turning on the confirmation hearings and some, and watching, you know, just for what kind of hysteria, you know, everyone but Fox News will be having, because of course Fox, you know, it's, and not that, I mean, Fox News obviously has its bias, so it will be literally, you can watch one side of the, you know, cheering on
Fox News. Pick your bias. Yes,
exactly. Pick your bias and roll your dice and, you know, change the stations and, you know, maybe turn on some sport ball every once in a while, or as I've been, or as I want to do a true crime show. Just cleanse the palate.
Yes. Well, we were talking about Kamala Harris, and I pulled up the piece I did on Friday at Red State. I included her tweet in there.
Ask you about.
She said, Republican, and you have to read this in a very, very sad voice. Republicans just announced that they are scheduling a hearing for Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh starting on September 4th. This is outrageous. No one will be able to look at his full record before the hearing. Not me, not you, not anyone. It won't have been made public. End tweets. And I, right after that, I included some actual facts, which Kamala does not include online when she's talking about this, from the Judicial Crisis Network. And it was sent to me by a friend who actually works there. And she included all this, you know, these factual things about the documentation that Kavanaugh has provided. And here are just a few items. Judge Kavanaugh, and this is all from her, and these are, these are, you know, facts. Judge Kavanaugh has been on the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals for 12 years. He has issued 307 opinions and joined hundreds more. He has a comprehensive record of jurisprudence that has been in the public domain for years. Documents submitted to the Senate Judiciary Committee pertaining to Judge Kavanaugh's time serving in the White House counsel's and independent counsel's office are the largest number of executive branch records ever submitted to the committee for a Supreme Court nominee. I know, this completely shoots her out of the water. Judge Kavanaugh returned the most comprehensive bipartisan Senate questionnaire in Judiciary Committee history. And then the last one, which is very interesting, which again shoots whatever Kamala says out of the water, which happens quite a bit, because she's a fearmonger. That's just her thing. I mean, she's from California. How couldn't she be? But she's, this is another little thing. Senator Grassley has allotted more time between the nomination of Judge Kavanaugh and the start date of hearings than the timeline established by former Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Patrick Leahy for Justices Sotomayor and Kagan. Senator Leahy scheduled hearings 49 days after the nomination of Justice Kagan, 48 days after Sotomayor. Judge Kavanaugh's hearings will start 57 days after his nomination. And even hearings for Justice Gorsuch were held 48 days after his nomination announcement. So the questionnaire is filled out better than any of the other nominees. Mm-hmm. There's more information than ever before, and there's been more time to look at it. But still, Kamala can't handle that.
But she's supposedly one on the short list for 2020 for the Democratic run.
Oh, jeez.
Which, again, Trump will not be running against a Democrat. He'll be running against the media.
Yes. Oh, so true. But I think the real issue they have with this nominee is because it's the second nominee from Trump.
Oh, yes.
And you know, Dianne Feinstein and others have said, you know, we just want all the documentation. Wait. So if you have all the documentation, then you're going to give him a fair shake? I don't think so.
No. And you know, Dianne Feinstein, the woman who had a Chinese operative in her staff for 20 plus years. Okay. Ding oh, dong.
The freak out.
Yeah. So, to move away from, we were supposed to, you know, pick kind of like things that we wanted to talk about, and we've been talking about kind of the hysteria and other things like that. And so the story that I saw this morning, which really made me laugh and just kind of say, what is going on, is The Hill, which, by the way, The Hill is ranked when on those little spectrum, you know, whenever they do the, oh, you know, here's news sites on the spectrum of left to right. The Hill is somehow always put on the conservative side. And I've never understood that other than, oh, yes, it always is. It's always on the conservative spectrum. And it's like, I'm always like, is that because they allow, conservative contributors, because the Hill does kind of in some ways operate as a blog, in that they have contributors who, you know, can submit opinion pieces. And so every once in a while, it's like a Buck Sexton, who also does a show, I think, for the Hill, like the Hill TV or something like that. With, what's her name from, the Obama administration, Jen Psaki. So the Hill had an article today of Sessions. Kim, okay, do you have your pearls on? Before I tell you this title, do you have your pearls on?
Do I have what? I'm sorry?
Your pearls on? Your clutching pearls? Do you have your...
You're breaking up. I'm sorry. You're breaking up a little bit. I can't hear you very well. Sorry.
Oh, that's okay. But can you hear me now?
Yeah, a little bit better. That's better.
Okay. I'll make sure to cut all this out. But
sure, thanks.
Yeah, no. Do you have your clutching pearls on?
I do. I do. I'm ready.
Do you have your fainting couch behind you?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Jeff Sessions, Kim, dined at a Mexican restaurant before giving a speech on immigration. Now. You're laughing because you're crying so hard, right?
Yes. I'm sorry. I'm very disturbed that he had some chips and salsa and perhaps queso before talking about immigration.
Yes. No. This is another part of the just ridiculous, outrage. Yeah. I think it's there's somebody who's writing a book. Oh, I think it's Glenn Beck is writing a book called Addicted to Outrage. So I keep on, like, every time I think of that word, that phrase, I'm like, oh, isn't that a book? And then I'm like, no, I was like, I'm pretty sure it's a book that's not even out yet. So, anyways, but yes, so this story is about how, Attorney General Jeff Sessions dined at a decades old Mexican restaurant, Kim, decades old, on Friday before giving a speech on the dangers of uncontrolled immigration in Houston, Texas. They actually went to the restaurant and said, and asked, one of the general manager of the, restaurant called Zalema Gonzalez, and she says, I don't know why they picked this place. And so they actually went there and questioned her about why Jeff Sessions was eating there. But she said that other high profile people like Justice Sonia Sotomayor has eaten there before. So it is just hilarious to me. And then of course they bring up the fact that Homeland Security Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen was followed out of a Mexican restaurant in Washington, D.C. by protesters earlier this year during the height of backlash over the family separation policy. I.e., they cannot believe that Republicans are still eating at Mexican restaurants when they are so against immigration. And this is
not legal immigration. I mean, we're not Laura Ingraham, so we don't have a problem with legal immigration. But just about uncontrolled, you know, illegal immigration or problems within the immigration system that need to be reworked. How you can't eat at a Mexican establishment because why? And I think that's a huge slap in the face to people who run that establishment. I'm not going to assume that they're illegals or have, you know, like tricked the system to get here and serve me my fajitas and my bowl of queso. They're basically assuming that the people at this restaurant, that he would go and pay to give, you know, for them to give him food and then go badmouth them. Well, you're assuming a lot about the people at this Mexican restaurant. That's pretty rude.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm looking on this article, and it is not listed as opinion, but they have not at the top and not at the bottom under the tags. It has nowhere. Is it, you know, a lot of times things will be tagged as opinion, and right, yeah. This author John Bowden says Sessions spoke later that day at the United States Attorney General's office for the Southern District of Texas, where he urged the public to support, and this is, quote, common sense, unquote, immigration enforcement measures he said the Trump administration was employing. I just think it's really interesting that this isn't listed as opinion when it clearly is an opinion piece. So
yes, and that just proves to you, I mean, the Hill, I will check the Hill, you know, several times during the week. And I never, ever, exactly. I don't at all think that they're on the right. I don't even think that they lean right. Now, like you said, they have contributors and there's, I've seen right and left contributions and stuff, but at the very best, they're moderates, but they lean to the left. I mean, come on. The headlines they have on there, they're very, I mean, it's a leftist site.
Yeah, it's, I mean, like, again, like I said, it's, I've noticed before that they've always listed certain things by certain people, especially like by conservative opinion columnists. It's always listed as opinion. It's under, maybe it's under the opinion vertical, you know, I didn't look there. So maybe it is under the opinion vertical on the Hill. Anyone listening, if I've screwed that up, but it's not tagged as opinion anywhere in the actual article. Now, Kim, to wrap us up, that was my funny story and amusing thing that kind of made me laugh this week. But your thing that you have kind of talked about on social media, both on Facebook and on Twitter this past week, actually goes into the one we're trying to get better at this whole social media interaction thing, especially with in regards to the podcast. We're newbies. Okay. Maybe I'm not.
We are,
I am at trying to actually like be more, responsive and more, getting, you know, interest in the podcast outside of, just us talking our rears off. But I tweeted out last night, that we were going to be doing this episode. And I, said that we had a few things already picked out, but what would listeners like to know our thoughts and opinions on? And actually the, well, we got two responses, but one was from Jay Crusoe and it's about cheesecake. And we all know you're wrong. And we've already talked about it. I'm kidding. But we've already discussed the cheesecake thing. But one of my favorite Twitter accounts, it's Blame Big Government, who's at Blame Big Govt. So you should definitely go follow him. He's very interesting. His avatar is a picture of a William F. Buckley holding up his index finger, clearly about to make a point. But he said, your impressions or experiences offline versus online with politics and personal interactions and those involving ideological differences. And he said, he gives his own opinion. He says, in my opinion, we've continued to slide into an abyss of dysfunction and incivility post-election. Most on the left in my life, happy to lead the way. So you've talked about this, and I know I've encountered it in the last week with some glow-eyed accounts. But, you know, you've actually like opined on this more than I have. Because you're more willing to engage than I am.
Confrontational.
Yes. As we talked about last week, Kim is more confrontational than I am. I see those kinds of things that I just, I just scroll past it in my notifications. So I just can't see it anymore. Cause then if I can't see it, it doesn't exist. you've kind of been talking about this. So what have your experiences been like?
Well, just in the past week, it's especially online compared to real life. Now, I have in real life, obviously, not everyone agrees with anyone 100% of the time. Same thing in my life. And I have pretty strong opinions on a lot of things. But I have family and friends who voted for Trump, who love Trump. Family and friends who like Hillary. And actually some who really love Bernie Sanders. And I've had actual real life conversations with all of them who are in these different categories, and they're actually fine. I mean, we may end the conversation agreeing to disagree, but there's not like, we don't throw, you know, ridicule at each other. We don't, we're not calling each other names. It's because we're just talking about what we believe. And in real life, we're able to do that in a calm manner. Now online, it's completely different. I mean, just this week, I'm trying to think of, this week, even just talking about my opinions on something like what Laura Ingraham said on her show, someone called me whiny, which is not that big of a deal, but I've been told that about my opinion on Alex Jones, I was told I was a pale, unhealthy looking book nerd, which I'm pale and I would say I'm probably a book nerd. So that's not exactly offensive, but the unhealthy part, I mean, is that needed? But just name calling, and I've never experienced as much ridicule from people who disagree with me as I have, I would say, in the past 2 years or so. I mean, even so far as people who are reading what I say or follow me on Twitter, they will find my Facebook, my public Facebook account, which is, by the way, it's Kimberly Ross Writer, so find me. they will find that, and I've actually had people say, quote, I hope someone shoots you in the head because of your opinion. Yes. Someone else, I hope you are blown up somehow and that you are killed, you know, things like this. Obviously, I report these people, but it's amazing to me just the vitriol from individuals who disagree with me, and I might disagree with them, but to go so far as to wish harm on people, wish death, mm-hmm. wish, you know, bad will befall them in their life just because we have difference of opinion compared to in real life people who love the same politician that these same people who send me bad messages loves, they're able to have a conversation without, you know, all the rudeness. And it's amazing. And we definitely, I think since Trump got into office, it's definitely been this slide, you know, like he blamed big government, saying slide into abyss of dysfunction and incivility. I really think so, because Trump might say something just to stir people up, and it's not like I love what he says or agree with him, but the media will respond in this like overwrought manner that goes completely beyond any sort of rational response. And then he might say something in turn. And so if you're standing there in the middle of that, I mean, I kind of feel like I stand in the middle between the two crazies and mm-hmm. point out when either side is bad. And I know you do too. You don't play favorites. And I think we need more people like us, Andrea. Yeah. But if you don't play favorites, and if you say, well, hey, your side needs to work on this, and hey, you guys do too, people can't handle that. And I'm sure you've experienced that as well, right?
Oh, absolutely. And you know, it's like I come from a family who I believe mostly voted for Donald Trump. And then I grew up in the Pacific Northwest. And so most of my friends, they either, you know,
are they Sanders fans?
Well, see, that's the thing. My county voted, I think, 80% for Bernie Sanders during the primaries. And of course, Hillary Clinton then won, you know, Washington State. Again, we're not vicious in person.
No.
It's an online thing where it's like, look, I may be conservative, but I understand where you're coming from. We just, you know, there's easy answers, which are what Bernie Sanders and even Hillary Clinton have, which are, you know, oh, the government needs to help support your life, you know. And then there's the other half of like, which I understand, like the hard reality of, you know, rights come with responsibilities, and that's, it really gets difficult. But yeah, I think that there also comes a lot of avoidance of these kinds of issues. I know someone else on Twitter I saw said that they had kind of like taken a not talking politics in person at all kind of tack, unless it was a, you know, talking with family around the dinner table. And he said even now he won't, you know, engage in that. So
it's overall, it's much easier to be obviously rude towards strangers because you don't know, like you said, their background, why they're feeling a certain way. Obviously people feel a certain way. Those who supported Trump, there's plenty of them who voted for him for certain reasons. Maybe they wanted the Supreme Court to be under conservative control for the next, you know, for the foreseeable future and everything. So there's definitely familiarity. You know, you might be kinder towards someone when you're discussing politics, but of course you shouldn't be rude and malicious and vicious towards people online, even if they're strangers. But we're definitely in that zone to where people, I guess, default towards that, because if they don't agree with you, then somehow that makes you a bad person. But it's amazing that someone you may disagree with and may have a completely different worldview than you, that doesn't make them a bad person. I'm not sure why we can't get to that point. Even I have a friend who's a blogger. She's very pro-choice. She's a feminist. We disagree completely on the abortion issue and most women's issues, but we are not mean toward each other. She's still a good wife and mother.
Well, you know, and the thing that is amazing, you know, for all of the wandering that I did during my little, you know, trying to get to a point, which I apologize for, and I'll probably cut out a lot of, is that if I ever tried to make that point, not like carrying the kind of GOP conservative line of no, you made those decisions as a 19-year-old, you need to live with them, you know. That if I tried to say like, hey, look, I have sympathy, like I understand, you know, like maybe we shouldn't be pushing, you know, 19-year-olds to make big financial decisions when they're making no money for
which is a great point.
But you are a liberal, you know, yes. Socialist.
You're a libtard.
Yes, exactly. If you make
you would get cut down so bad.
Yeah. So I mean that I guess like that is the point that I was trying to get to, and I'm sorry it took so long to get there. But that was the point that I was trying to make, is that, you know, it's like you can't share those kinds of opinions. Nuance. There is no nuance allowed. Yeah. You're either.
And all we have, I'm sorry, are these like little sound bites, these little snippets, these little tweets. I mean, there's not many characters to get our points across. And when you try to say something like that in one sentence, people just assume a lot of things about you that aren't true.
Right. Because as wandering as I got, because I was literally like talking this as I was thinking it through, you know, normally you need to have like, you know, time to kind of process something. But it's like, You need time to kind of like work these things out. If you can't fit them into 280 characters, no one reads past. You know, it's like we have the conversation all the time, especially at Red State. Like, how many words are people going to read? It's usually less than 400. So that you've got two tweets to have somebody understand your point. You know,
Forget having a normal like real conversation with someone. It's not going to happen.
Well, so we have talked for almost an hour, Kim. So much for we were going to have a short conversation, and I think we could probably have like 2 hour conversations.
I think so.
But anyway, so we will wrap things up. We're sorry we took so much of your time this week, but definitely hit us up on social media. You can find me at Andrea and Ruth, and you can find Kim
at Southern Keeks, KEKS, and be nice. Thank you.
Yes. Yes, that's all we ask. We'll be nice if you're nice. Although I do have a tendency towards being dismissive. What's your, just out of curiosity, what's your like worst instinct or habit on social media? Mine is to like go with instant kind of dismissive sarcasm and kind of like even when someone's trying to be nice, I kind of like shoot back with like, oh, that's just dumb. Like that. Which I don't tend to do often.
I tend to tell them that they clearly have trouble with reading comprehension.
That's a default. Yeah. It's always good to kind of like admit, like, you know, it's like your part in everything, I feel like.
So, I could work on being less dismissive. Yes.
Yes. I could work on being less. That's my thing, is being being too dismissive. Yes. So, but it is Twitter, right? I mean, when someone only, I know that people always say, oh, you shouldn't talk about follower counts. It's like, I'm sorry, if you have 5 followers and you're, and I hate that they don't have the egg anymore. And you're just a shadow of a human being because you haven't put a profile picture up. I'm sorry, but I am going to be a little bit dismissive and relegate you to, you know, being to sarcastic responses. So anyways, we hope you have a great week, and we will be back next week with a guest. Yes, a great guest. So just wait until you find out who it is. All right, bye.
Bye.